In this report to the fact that the lapses in 11 days?
14 days.
In 14 days. Do we refer to it in here?
Yes.
Because I don't see us recommending that it continues.
No, there's already one is a dissolution.
Is it dissolution?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We're only one to express approval.
All right.
Yes. Yes,
No, Chaperson, I think that I went through it. I don't think that it is necessary to go. But I'm having some other issues that I want to raise. Can I raise it now?
Yeah.
Chaperson, on recommendations, I don't see that we are asking for investigation into that thing, because you see, I think that's fraud and corruption involved in that municipality. Yeah, and you see the matter issue, because it's about tenders and whatever. So I will propose that we in our recommendations, maybe 4.1.2, we include a paragraph to say that the Minister of COPTA must approach the police for investigation or the box as a matter of urgency.
Yeah. Chair, I will second the proposal, Honourable.
Forgive me, Chair, but I'm a bit in the dark here. You say it's a dissolution.
Yes.
So what is the process now? Because In 4.1.2, you say there should be quarterly the progress of one. If they are dissolved, then there should be an election of a new council.
Yes.
So the background of that, the administrator and MEC should keep an address in terms of preparation of elections and all.
Shouldn't we say that?
Because
in the
first
quarterly report, there should be specifically advised on the progress of preparation for elections.
Yes. Okay. And any other issue?
Support.
Okay. Thank you. On Ngaka Muliru Mulema, it's an extension. Extension of section 1391B. I think the other doctor who we were together the last intervention.
No, I missed that one as well. That's my routine. Sorry, I missed it.
No, not for that.
No. I think Becker went.
The second visit we went through.
Yes.
The main thing is the extension. Whether we approve the extension, but the Board of Qualification of Office should be intensive investigation by police and the office.
Yes.
I think it's not coming out here. If we can add that as a recommendation. Because of the former, the one for also doctrine. They're not very deep and scientific. It's just that we need investigation, but we're not now directed. Are we agreed on that?
Yes, Chair. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Can I pass it?
Yes, yes, Chair. What type of petition?
Mama Sulia. Is there anything on the documentation special of those who might have read?
The same with this one of Masinyam. You remember there was an issue of 46 million rand that went missing, and I don't see anywhere in the report. But it's not necessary. I will say that we include again this paragraph to say the police investigation stroke hoax. The minister must institute that investigation.
Yes. And are we agree?
Where is this responsible?
Masulia is in the first day in the real estate manager. You remember we could not take it when we went to.
Yeah.
And it's
fine. Yeah, okay.
Is it fine? And we can go to Madibe. Madibe is in Northwest, where that last week come from.
Where in Northwest?
And those economic, the big farm, mines.
Is there any municipality so functional in Northwest?
I'm not sure which municipality can we say the best to confront. Because it is a quiet one, ahead in this problem.
Yeah.
What group?
No, I went also to this one. But the secretary, Mr. Manuel, must just help here. Where was it where the people stood up and said that they recommend that it must be 1C? Is it Madibeng or the other one? And then the next question, Chair, is the 90,000 rand that disappeared from a drawer, was it this municipality or was it Swahili? I don't have my notes with me, that's why I'm asking. The 90,000.
That point that one of the recommendations is popular support for one thing.
No, but do we support that popular support? That's the problem.
No,
we
didn't.
No, I don't think we should. Because elections now is bad.
Yeah. Let's note it as a political debate if we can engage it anyway.
No, Chairperson. Let us put it in. We don't support it, but the true reflection of our visit must come in the report.
So
you see, when it comes to point 12, community and business members, that is what the people have said. We put it in there. We just put it in there.
Let's put it as our observation, our committee observation. But the recommendation must be written right there.
That's
fine.
Yeah. That's okay.
Any other
issue?
I agree.
We have put the issue of the police and the hawks.
It comes out under 9.1.4, whereby it says the Minister for Culture should institute an independent forensic investigation in all the allegations of financial mismanagement and forward in the affairs of the municipality.
Chairperson, you know why I will prefer and recommend that we involve the police or hawks. You see, yesterday it came out with an investigation in Cipro. The department spent 1 million rand
to investigate, to have an investigation, for a forensic investigation. Now, if we use security agents, then it won't cost us anything. You understand the Department of traditional, what is it, local culture will spend money when they ask Obodo or whoever and whoever, PricewaterhouseCoopers, they will charge, and we are already in problems. So that's why I'm proposing, let's not take that route. Let's take the police on the rocks.
Is there another group? Because I think I would support that. Forensic investigation will cost the state much. There are many forensic investigations. That's what I recommend. That's why maybe they are not taking implementation. It might be cost implications. Maybe with this one, because it is our own security structure, we'll be able to say what is the case number, what is what. Are we agree?
Yeah.
Right. Which means.
No, sir. Like mine said, I wanted to comment on 9.15, as well by the committee recommend that the administrator should provide the quarterly report. Check in terms of the rules, I'll say that that must change, not being an administrator, but the provincial executive or the MEC, because that report should be provided to the end of the project. By total means, not an official. So, I didn't, and I'm sure that I can submit the report to the provincial executive, the provincial executive, either to the MEC, can start to submit it to the SOB. So, we change that.
Okay. Thank you. It's fine. Can we go to try? Hey, but, oh, by the way, they will also investigate the sale of land. Under my head, because it came out here that the land sale was not fine.
But then we must list that as a separate point, otherwise it will get lost.
Okay, yes, you have to comment the sale of private, investigate the sale of private.
Yes.
Sorry.
Sorry, sir, but that one, they should report back to us as soon as they've investigated. So that we can take it further.
Yeah. I think in that context of permitted executive.
Yeah.
So I think from the, I requested the COVID section to do the synopsis of all our visits and all our recommendations. We sit down, we see which permit we caught in summer for accounting the cost of the room. I think it would be taken in that one. Can we go to the last one? What that we add or remove it, train? When we say that we put up on support in all other reports, it should be removed to condition it.
Chairperson, if
there's
any where we would, the 90,000 were disappeared from there. And the second, the 90,000 plus the 800,000 of the insurance, that is also a question mark. I don't see it yet, but let's put it as the police and Hawks must investigate those things.
Are you right?
Yeah. Chairperson, and in this report, I don't see that we are mentioning, because even the councillor raised the issue of political interference. Political interference from outside. I don't see it in this report. But in Matibeng, I saw it in Matibeng's one, and it's nicely crafted. In Matibeng, 6.16.
They are under. I want. It should the observation, but 6.18 in chapter 5. But just to clarify, just to clarify the committee, maybe it would be important to clarify the committee because it was in this one in policy where we hit the new state lines. Is it correct? To clarify, is this one responsible the way we hit the new state lines and directives? So, you know, we started the meeting 2 o'clock, which is not a true reflection of what happened. What happened is that indeed we left to 3:30, and then believe it that is for even Hispanic. When we were supposed to start our meeting at 9 o'clock, yeah. And we're there. But going back to Pilar, we reached there somewhere past 10. Yeah. And then we started the meeting at half past 10 with council, leadership of council, management, administrator, thank. And then we only met stakeholders at about 1 o'clock. Yeah. And then that's where maybe the misinterpretation came in. I just wanted to formalize it, how it happened, so that we don't hide anything that happened.
No, from my side, I want to compare what the chairperson is saying, that we were at the venue 5 to 9 in Friday, because we got that information. 5 to 9, we were standing in front of the municipal office, so we were on time there. But then they said, no, it is not yet. We must rise further. So I just want to concur and support what the chairperson is saying, that we were never late before any appointment. We left our hotel, our accommodation very early to reach our destination.
So the point that was made was the people that were waiting for the 1 o'clock meeting thought that their meeting was a test. Now, somewhere there is a communication problem.
I think we need to acknowledge that maybe how the management must sort this communication thing. Right. But overall, the committee was not linked other than that confusion.
Yeah, possibly it's a bit late now, Chair, but we should have issued a statement on that statement.
Yeah, I wanted to formalize it in a committee before any other thing, but to get mixed feelings and all sorts of things.
No, we can, but it's not news anymore.
Okay. It's news to me. But what I like about, can we agree to pass so that we don't take time for our visitors? But I want to thank you very much. Thank you.
Before you close the meeting, you know, Mr. Bloom and Mr. Gunda and I just come from programming, which after that was the rules, and we have to Russia, and we're also involved, Mr. Bloom and I, in the construction of review committee and subcommittees of this and that and the other, and my whip and I, Mr. Harris, sat and looked at the program on the screen with all the committees and then the bills that were presented. And between the Finance Committee and Appropriations and this trust, we do 80% of the work of the NCMP. And maybe you and your colleagues in the security sector should go and talk to the leadership so that they split these two committees. Because COCTA alone has got more than enough work. And security services with correctional services, justice, police, what else? Constitutional development, it has got more than enough work as well. Whereas there are committees that I'm sure they wonder what to do next week. So maybe we must talk to them because they are the least looking at portfolios at the moment.
Yeah.
And maybe they must have a look at the at the at the realignment of clusters.
All right. I will take the week to agree with me. Yes?
No, Jefferson, I disagree.
Don't tamper with this committee. We are functioning very well, even if we sit up until 8 last night. But if they are going to tamper with this committee, they are going to bring in lazy people in here, and it will create a problem. I disagree strongly with this. We are doing very well for now, for this half year. No, I personally am satisfied.
I think what Rodson was saying was that I'm afraid speak to the leadership not to turn on this committee. Whatever they do, they can do, but this committee was not reacting. I think you also have the document on the report you have to adopt the report from the Magistrate Commission on the suspension of the four magistrates. Can we also peruse the document and adopt that report? Of the committee when we received briefing from the Magistrate Commissioner that we approve all the suspensions. Yes. Any second?
Yes.
Second that the reports on the suspension of the magistrate is adopted. Without any waste of time, let me welcome the delegation from the police again the chairperson of the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development. I will allow other members of the committee to introduce themselves and immediately hand over to you to continue the presentation. Honorable members.
My name is Matron and I'm from the committee member.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dennis Bloom. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Wadi Matron and I wish to be excused for a few minutes.
My name is Boris Sirenet, a member of the
With me on my left is the committee secretary, Mr. Dashon Dixon, and sitting next to you there is Patricia Wittels of the committee of session.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Major General Philip Jacobs. I'm presently acting as the Regional Commissioner of Legal Services. I'm asking you to introduce himself.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Irvin Kills. I'm the Chief Director of Policy and Research in the Secretariat of Police.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there was a PowerPoint presentation that was distributed, and there are some important references in it. But if you would allow me, Chair, I want to present this in a very narrative fashion, explaining the process that we go through with these proclamations. Chairperson, the United Nations Security Council actions relating to the listing of suspected Taliban and Al-Qaeda terrorists dates back from the bombings of the U.S. embassies in 1999 in Nairobi, Kenya, as well as in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. These bombings have been allegedly perpetrated by Osama bin Laden and sponsored by the Taliban. The UN Security Council used Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, which is reflected in the PowerPoint, to set up a committee referred to as a Resolution 1267 Committee to list the names and individuals and entities linked to Osama bin Laden and the Taliban, and to determine that all member states of the United Nations should exercise or actually enforce sanctions against the Taliban. It was mostly directed at the Taliban at that stage, and it was related to the landing of aircraft from the territories of member states or receiving aircraft coming from Afghanistan, and also to freeze the funds and other financial sources owned or controlled by the Taliban. Chair, what we should take into account that at that stage, the Taliban was the de facto government in Afghanistan, and that a safe haven was provided in Afghanistan for Osama bin Laden, for training camps and also hideouts. Chair, thereafter followed the events of 9-1-1, as we know, the 11 September events in Washington, New York and Pennsylvania. And the committee's work and mandate was then extended to include also Al-Qaeda. Now, the job of the committee is to keep on up-to-date a list of four categories. The first is the Taliban members. Secondly, persons and or entities associated with the Taliban. The third part of the list is Al-Qaeda members. And the last part is entities that's linked with Al-Qaeda. Chairperson, the obligations are on member countries of the UN to freeze the funds of Al-Qaeda or any one of those entities or the Taliban. It's also in members countries as well as an arms embargo on the Taliban, the Al-Qaeda, as well as organizations linked to that. And if you would go into the list, you will find that even like Abu Sayyaf in East Asia is listed as being linked to Al-Qaeda. Chairperson, the functions of the committee is to receive from member countries of the UN applications to list suspected persons in this regard. Any state can therefore apply to the Security Council through the 1367 committee to list a person being so suspected. Such a request must be made in the form of what they call a statement of case, where the suspicions, the information, whether it's intelligence, etc., must be set out in that statement of case. All the member countries of the involved in the Security Council, 15 of them, are members of the 1367 committee. And normally the statement of case, the request for the listing, is then circulated for 7 days within the 1367 committee, whereafter the listing is done. Chairperson, other issues in the meantime, the follow-up resolutions of the Security Council and the 1367 committee was that what is also prohibited is that participating in the financing, planning, facility, facilitation, performing, or perpetrating of acts of support towards those organizations and individuals, and also the supplying or selling or transferring of arms that I've already mentioned, and otherwise supporting the structures of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Chairperson, once the 1367 committee decide to list the person or entity, the governments are informed through their missions in the UN, and there's also immediately a press statement made by the Security Council. What we normally do is we do not wait for the official notification from the UN. We monitor the data, the website of the UN Security Council and this committee, and we start working in anticipation of the formal notification, preparing a proclamation for the President. Chairperson, the way in which the names are placed on the list is by means of consensus between the members on the Security Council. A member of the Security Council, and only members of the Security Council, can actually place a hold on the listing of a person. Chairperson, in the meantime, the committee, and I must say there was also a lot of criticism about the list. It happens very frequently that names on the list are being changed. And there were also some criticism against the UN in terms of the process that's been followed, because you can imagine that the person who's been listed there's no legal process. It's something that happens in an international organization, so there's actually no legal recourse. The first that the person knows about this listing is when he's already listed. So what the UN did is that they actually demanded a review of the list. Presently, there's about 500 names on the list. And the target is to finalize this review by the 30th of June this year. In the meantime, there's also been an ombudsperson appointed to consider requests for delisting. Delisting can be made by the individual involved directly to what they call a focal point in the committee, or it can be made through the state involved. In other words, the individual can approach the state and ask the state to intervene on their behalf to ask for delisting. The delisting process is quite an elaborate one. It goes through various processes within the council, and it's not very easy for names to be deleted from the list. What happens as well is that if a listed person is deceased, the state involved can also request the committee to remove the name from the list. Chairperson, once we pick up the listing of a person, we prepare the proclamation for the President. We send it through the Minister of Police to the President for his signature. In terms of the Act, the President must publish it in the Gazette, and it must also be published in another manner prescribed by the President. Chair, since we have introduced this on the 5th of May 2005, we've also published the name the proclamations on the website of the South African Police Service. And what is happening in the committee itself update the list, and they call it the consolidated list. That consolidated list is available on their website. We have links from our website to that list, and this also duplicates on the website of the Financial Intelligence Center. Chair, once the President signs this, we publish it in the Gazette, and thereafter it's sent for tabling in Parliament. Chair, just on that note, I've made a list for the Secretary of according to our records, the proclamations that have not previously been considered by Parliament. And you will see that they date back from 7 May 2008. Chairperson, we realized early 2009 that with the elections and very short sitting of Parliament in 2009, we kept those over until after the elections. So the first batch was tabled after the elections, and then in February this year, we tabled the proclamations relating to 2009. And we plan to, more or less every 6 months, you will see that the frequency is not there. Some months said there's no, that there's no tabling. Chairperson, as well, we should see this also within the context of South Africa's position as a member of the Financial Action Task Force, which demands a very strict control in respect not only of anti-money laundering measures, but also the financing of terrorism. South Africa has been evaluated last year and found very much compliant in this regard. So our banks and financial institutions are quite well aware of this whole process. And when the Act was put into operation in 2005, there was a lot of interaction, mostly through the Financial Intelligence Center, to alert the banks to the fact. And they also do not wait for a proclamation within their system. They normally work on the consolidated list that is with the UN. But the proclamation is important for law enforcement, Jeff, because once the name is published on the list, and that person would find himself in South Africa, he does give us a ground in terms of Section 23 of the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorist and Related Activities Act to freeze the funds. Of course, there are safety measures built into that. There must be an application to a judge in chambers before that freezing of the funds can be done. The listing is also, and the publishing in the proclamation is also, very much related to Section 4 of the, if I can call it, the Counterterrorism Act for brevity. In the sense that one of the issues referred to in that section that relates to financing of terrorism, providing arms, ammunition, and training and recruitment, it is also listed to the issue of the publication in the list. So, in terms of law enforcement, it is important to have it proclaimed in the Gazette. Chairperson, there is an obligation on this committee to report annually to the Security Council through the Counterterrorism Committee. There are three committees in the UN dealing with terrorism. That's the Counterterrorism Committee with the UN Counterterrorism Executive Directorate as part of it. And then what they call the 154 Committee dealing with weapons of mass destruction. And then, of course, this 1267 Committee. Chairperson, the volume of these proclamations is quite a lot. What I did for the benefit of the members, I've made a copy of the front pages of the different gazettes. And if you would go to the back of that, you will find one complete proclamation. Basically just echoing the provisions of the Act. And what differs from the respective proclamations is only the annexure at the back. In other words, if there's a name that's added, a name that is deleted. Chair, so that is basically the whole story, in short. And as I said, in this PowerPoint presentation, we have quoted the provisions of Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, which actually provides the mandate for the Security Council. And any resolution taken in terms of Chapter 7 of the UN Charter is binding. I can also refer to Resolution 1373 of 2001, 28 September 2001, which actually obliges states to take all the necessary steps in order to curb international terrorism. And all those provisions are binding. We had two visits. One was some 3 years ago of Mr. Martin Shannon, who is actually the special rapporteur in respect of the protection of human rights within the context of the countering of terrorism, and also more recently of the UN Counterterrorism Executive Directorate, which was quite if I can say, impressed with the compliance of South Africa regarding the issue of the countering of terrorism. We have actually ratified all 13 counterterrorism conventions, and I think our legislation to a large degree is quite a model in terms of covering all the different conventions and international obligations in resolution on peace and as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Honourable members, we can engage with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. A question for clarification. Is there any threat of terrorism against our country? Why this proclamation in this briefing? That is my question.
Thank you very much to make the addition to the question by Honorable Group. Can you also appraise us to the lives that I think is important? A transport of 2010, as we see in the news, and if you could appraise us on that, but also. What I applied, I know some of the information might be seriously confidential. Our borders are porous, very porous. What choice do you have to make sure that if the terrorists or whatever Al-Qaeda can go through, can come through those porous borders? How strong is our spine? In the light of lack of a secure border, because honestly speaking, our borders are not secure. And we don't even know the connections, interconnection of the African countries with the terrorists or with Al-Qaeda or whatever. You remember, is it Kenya and some years back where something that we never expected that can happen in country next to South, next to South Africa, where you have a threat that was bombed, by terrorists, something like that. What surety can you really give us to say that you think nothing can happen? I say this because in terms of intelligence, the forces behind Al-Qaeda, Taliban, whatever, they will always abuse some benefit of international popularity, like 2010, where there's high economic activity, something like that. They will always go to that type of a situation to ensure that they advance their objective.
Chairman, it's almost the same thing, that because if you look at Africa and the fact that our borders are such insecure, I mean, I'm just in that way. I'm worried when you think of Al-Qaeda, you think about Muslim people. You're wrong, and I'm not thinking in that fashion. But most of the time, you find that in this township, I mean, the people from Pakistan and these areas are all in this township. And we don't know how they come in here. Because these networks go up with them. And they end up living here. So how are we sure of the fact that in case Al-Qaeda is not in our township already? I mean, that's interesting because if you see most of these people that are being arrested for these activities, most of them are people from Pakistan, from those areas. So those are the most people that are used. But there are African people, obviously, that are being used too. But as I'm, the reason is because I'm looking at in our township and think that, hey, you never know. So Osama bin Laden is already here in this country, sending two by another time. But to be so, I mean, exactly now it is 2010. What will happen? Nothing but threatened us. It's nothing, but now can we be so good? I'm not even using airports now, to be honest. Driving from here to Grandstown. Till this World Cup is over, because I don't want to get into a head. I'm worried about other people, but I'm applying my own pressure. That's that to be afraid, as Honorable Mokolo was saying, so that we can have some in a picture. Thank you.
It's not only the township. You see, in the most remote rural area, all the business, or most of the business that our people are taken over by this thing. This is not a business. They're walking around with whiskey. And in most of the rural areas, you don't even know where this kid is. Not only that, we generalize that it is there. We just see in that context of whatever it is.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, if I can address the question of the Honourable Mr. Bloom firstly, the question about why do we give this briefing. Chairperson, it more relates to our international obligations. The Act requires us to do these, to give effect to these listings of the Security Council. The international obligations in terms of Resolution 1373, 1367, and our own legislation obliges us to do that. The President must publish these names and in a proclamation, and we need to submit it to Cabinet. So that's basically the reason, in order to comply with our international obligations. Chair, regarding the threats and the readiness, etc., for 2010, really, with all respect, I do not think I'm the person that can really talk about it. The National Commission has addressed Parliament on it, in the Portfolio Committee and various other stages, and also elaborated on all the interactions with Interpol and within Africa with the Chiefs of Police and broader. But I don't think I'm unqualified to give an answer on that. Even on the issue about the terrorist threat and the one that was mentioned about the arrest that took place in Iraq, the National Commissioner, as far as I've gathered in the media, and that's all I know about it, is that, as I said, that they are interacting to get information on it and whatever. But, Chair, I cannot elaborate on that to add anything to what the National Commissioner has said publicly about this issue. And I think one of the members, I think he insisted by saying, you know, this information would lie within an ambit that even if I know or do not know, it's not something that's normally discussed in public. So, Chair, I would, with the indulgence of the committee, I just want to say the reason why we are here is in terms of complying with our international obligations. Thank you, sir.
And Mr. Are you afraid of being arrested?
I do understand, for this thing, even if he knows or he doesn't know, so let's rely to the commission, the National Commission, what is there. And I'll keep traveling with my power there. I'm not going to any airport now. Because if the security forces are not prepared to advise the decision to try to because they are fearing to spread information. I do understand what you're talking about, but at some point, at least, you need to give us some little bit of information. Because this one from the commissioner, only that one is too small, but any of that from the newspaper. But when it reaches us, then we understand. But then the other thing that I wanted to know, is when you talk about these people there, I'm like, I'm afraid. Now, I'm worried about this Deutsche Messe. some of my judgments, I'm taking them to my constituents' office. Now, if the constituents' office, these documents are open in people my country. Now, whilst we never know what is going on, would you advise me to keep a document in the advice office that is the main of Al-Qaeda, or must keep them with me?
Thank you, Chair. Now, Chair, I think we must be realize that there are different lists of suspected terrorists. Most countries have their own list, like the US has their list, Australia has their list. There are some intelligence lists, there are open lists, closed lists, but this list, and that is the reason why we can work with it in a legal fashion. It's a list of an international organization, United Nations, on their website, and agreed to by that organization and binding in terms of their resolutions. Chairperson, I think if we go back to the history of this act, and I think one of the members that I know that was intimately involved as well is the Honourable Mr. Bloom, because the Joint Standing Committee was part of the drafting of this act. It was said that there is no South African public list about this. We will work with the UN list. So, Chair, I think the member can be at ease with that. The documentation that we have here and that's on the website is open for everyone. And the reason for that is the 1267 listing is actually a precaution. It is to make it difficult for people who are listed to travel, to obtain weapons, and to receive financing. And for that reason, every bank, every financial institution must have this list of names to apply that. Thank you, Chair.
I know that those who are practically important, but by just presenting this statement, I was going to ask you a quick question. But does this presentation seek to assure us of the safety? In terms of that, are you presenting a provision that will assure us for a safety? Or just a story?
Chair, I think apart from the fact that it's mere procedure in terms of what we must do in terms of the Act, I do think it gives the assurance that we are part of this global attempt to make it more difficult for international terrorism to really hit any place in the world. And it's a reflection that that South Africa is part of the international community and the attempts of the international community. Thank you, Chief.
So it does it encourage the Honourable Minister to continue driving it? Okay, more later.
In the absence of further engagement, let me thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you very much.
At the office, and he is away away from office, and I'm sure caused by the fact that he has this alcohol abuse problem. And everybody in town also knows about this problem, the police, everybody, and that causes also embarrassment for the judiciary as a whole. We've had matters, his matter that he goes, to, you know, he before lunch he goes home or he goes away from the office, and when he comes back, he's intoxicated. We even learned and listened to some of the tapes, the recordings in court, and if you listen to those tapes, it it is like a person who is really, it's embarrassing, he's very drunk then. He's the chief magistrate, Mr. Hinkam Bloemfontein. He has gone out of his way and tried to accommodate Mr. Jacobs, and he has he's tried to give all assistance he could, but it's, he's gone to rehabilitation on two occasions. On one of the occasions, he even Mr. Jacobs even went to the High Court to have him allowed to go out of the rehabilitation for a weekend. So he is not always giving his cooperation, and it seems like the big other problem is that he's not realizing that he doesn't want to acknowledge that he has this problem. Some of the people at the office did not want to give us a statement at the, initially. They said he has got a fire weapon with him, and we got information that he also has it at the office and it lies around. So we got that taken away with the assistance of the police, and so that is the situation now. So we just asking that his provisional suspension with full salary be supported. He is being charged. We are in the process of charging him with a misconduct. That process is also going on. He was he's not at the office. He was suspended by the minister on the 30th of March this year.
Mr. Lowe said he was the only magistrate in the city.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Mr. Inkas also at some stage tried to utilize him at other offices, but the thing is he has to be under supervision at small towns in the vicinity, and the other problem is that he doesn't come to office one morning often, and then the neighboring magistrates, they've got their full roles, they have to on short notice go to the office to assist. So as being the only magistrate there, he does not have another additional magistrate that can stand in for him. I mean, it has happened that the prosecutor or the defense attorney or advocate, they during these proceedings that they would ask him, please, can he just stand off, and then they go and meet him in chambers and they ask him, please, not to continue. He's not in a state to continue. That's how far it has gone, Mr. Chief.
Have you made arrangements for his replacement?
Mr. Chair, that is something that the Chief Magistrate himself will, as being head of the cluster, he will be in charge of those applications for replacement and things like that. But he's kept on, we keep him on what's happening all the time.
Has he ever convicted people while he's under the influence of alcohol, and what are you going to do with such cases?
Mr. Chair, we don't have exact evidence about cases that has been where conviction actually took place while he was intoxicated, but if that should be the case, that those cases will be sent on special review, definitely.
Jefferson, thank you very much. You see, you have asked a very relevant and good question. You see, we are sitting with two people, the 17 years in Kronstadt. The
you see, and it can be the same. Yes, a person who is always under the influence of alcohol, sitting and listening to and dealing with cases. We don't know how many of our people were sentenced by this person, sitting in prison. Maybe others are out already. Now, it's also going to be very difficult. I hear what the presenter is saying. But how are we going to really verify this thing? Because it's a fact that many of our people are illiterate. And they will only agree. Some of them are pleading guilty for not even have committed this thing. But Chairperson, my question is, how long, because I've not had time to read this thing, for how long is this thing went out? And the implications of this, the question that the Chairperson has asked, for how long was this person behaving like this?
It appears that this has been going on for a number of years, but the Commission was not informed of that. It seems like all the magistrates in the vicinity stood in for him, and as soon as there was a problem, the other magistrates would come and they would deal with the matter. They would hear the case. So I think maybe that little safety net was also there. But, you know, I cannot guarantee which matters were only dealt with him, which one was intoxicated. We have, however, evidence that when he is sober, he is an excellent magistrate. He's very sharp. That's according to the attorneys and the other colleagues. It's only when he's intoxicated, and when that happens, they are made aware of that by the prosecution or by the attorneys in the town, and they will ask one of the other magistrates in the neighboring towns to come and rather take over the cases. When he is really intoxicated, usually he stays at home and that sort of thing. But the times that he has been there, those are the matters that he is being charged with while he is at the office. He's been intoxicated, and those matters are dealt with. And they were defended, so those matters will also be, I mean, those people will also ask that if there's something like that, they will ask him to rather recuse himself, or if it had gone too far to have the place method sent on review.
I think one would accept the suspension, but there should be an investigation. Whether other magistrates were saying when you saw that, yeah, the committee might not be able to be convinced whether indeed that happened. Because when you are in a class, sometimes can be sharp and deal with matters in such a way that everyone is satisfied. It's not that way that you are under the influence, maybe moderate or whatever. But what cannot want to? That we don't want the state that would start certain people under the influence of alcohol or other influences, maybe not alcohol alone, or other influences. We need to be protective as a state. Maybe to say that since you are suffering, is it about 50 years?
Mr. Chair, he's got 20 years service, but it appears it's a number of years now since the problem has started. He has marital problems and things like that, and it seems like that initiated the problem further.
Yeah, I think the period in which the problem was detected, maybe one would suggest to what it's the case is not the actual case. In the period where it was then identified that there was abnormality in this magistrate, let there be an audit only on the cases that he adjudicated.
Mm-hmm. Chair, we can accommodate that maybe to request the Judicial Quality Assurance Office to do an assessment of his judicial work for the last 3 years about. And I might just also mention at some stage Mr. Hinkart did step in to have him at another office, but you know, that's just taking the problem from one office to another office. It doesn't solve it, but that is what my speaker said, that we can that can be done also.
Okay.
How will an ordinary person in the street know that he was unfairly treated if there is no campaign to say that this is what it is? This is a very serious issue. And you know, it's not only a person being sentenced going to prison. It has also to do with family life. This person was probably not guilty, but he was taken away from the family, breadwinner. The children suffered, maybe his whole life, his marriage was broken up because of a drunken magistrate who has not applied his mind. This is very serious, check. It's not only a thing of adopting, which I agree with my colleague. We adopt this. But further investigation from us as well, Chair. I will plead from us as members of parliament, because we are representing the people out there. This is, and especially, you know, you are from the Free State. A place like Acropolis. Nobody takes that the people see this thing. And here is a thing like this coming out. I'm taking it very seriously, Chair. We must not leave it. But my follow-up question, again, for how long will this person be on suspension?
Yes, may I just maybe respond to this? Mr. Jacobs is not, say, in a month's time, he would do his work perfectly well. He would be at the office at time. But then all of a sudden, on a Monday, he starts drinking. And for the whole week, he would be drunk. He would postpone matters in the morning and then go home and drink and never come back to the office. Then other magistrates from neighboring districts would have to stand in for him and do the court rolls. That would mostly result in most of the cases be postponed again. But that it has come to this stage that the commission has to deal with this now. And that's why he's been provisionally suspended from office. He's been charged with misconduct and be found guilty. We are to be in that serious that he should be removed from office. And he most probably will resign. There is an indication from his pastor, which he phoned me about 2 months ago, that I would like to have him admitted at Noford for a year. Now, that would mean that he would actually resign, because he can provisionally suspend one at an office whilst this misconduct matter is still pending, and then await his rehabilitation process and wait, say, for instance, a year, and then later find out that he has been rehabilitated. What are we going to do? But we will definitely look into the cases itself. Most of them were there was a legal representative present in the court proceedings. They would have taken it under review. All the attorneys would request him to stand down the matters for a day or two, and then he would be perfectly fine and proceed with the matter. But Mr. Hinkart has agreed that he should be previously suspended from office. He has been suspended as from March. He's not at the office, like Mr. Lowe indicated. So at present he's at home. And we will serve his misconduct notice by the end of this week, after the end of this month, and commence with the inquiry.
And then Mr. Hinkie, for him,
why didn't he address this issue from the beginning? Why were they protecting him? Was this sort of protection of some kind? I mean, they are killing him, obviously. Because he knew that he was going to protest it and he continued to be. I think we need to know why did he do it? Why did he protest him instead of addressing the issue? And who is this healer? And then what will happen? From that, who is saying that? Was he saying, I suspect he has caused to travel through for protesting a certain group something wrong? If it's from the magistrate, if it's the superior or someone else. I think if you can know those questions, I mean, from them, so that when you go to investigate, you can verify the information of what we're getting. Because the major, major problem is to say, when he's sober, he's sharp. I think when he's a little bit drunk, he's sharp. He's sharp because he's hyper. I mean, he's got more energy. He thinks fast. So that needs to be investigated and be verified too. But I'm worried that if you're talking about those errors in the precinct, those people are even illiterate, most of the people in those areas. Especially in the more small towns. So what Honorable Bloom is saying here, we might have people who have suffered over this 20 years because of this man. That's why now I'm interested in Mr. Healer. Why did you protect someone doing something wrong? In fact, who is Mr. Healer? What did you do? The negative phrase. And did he inform them? Why did they hate him to be promoting this? Because he promoted it. This man would not have gone drunk most of the time if he was told from the beginning that this is wrong, is going to put you in this program. And I mean, again, he's been suspension already from March. He has been suspended. How long do they think the case will take? Because when you talk about the disciplinary policies and the code of conduct of public service, they are saying for corrective measures. They have done a lot to try and save this man. But this man is not cooperative. Now, how long is he going to live? Are they going to rely to the fact that he will be taken to move on? Or are they going to have because that's my main one. They might wait till he's being taken to Norfolk, and when he's there, I mean, it's rehabilitation must stay in Norfolk. That being beaten, I think we need to know, how long will the case take? And that, I mean, we have done it once before, in trying to address, I mean, he has been gone to a rare, and there's no change. What makes it now to be a long case? I mean, I'm just interested to know. In fact, I want to conclude by saying they have been protecting me. If not them, he has. If they can correct me on that statement, then maybe some of the questions that I'm having might be the best answer. Thank you very much.
See, it seems suspicious. You see, being monitored. What is he doing now?
I don't know, Jerry. He's been suspended from office. He's not at the office. Mm-hmm. He's not performing any judicial functions.
But are you monitoring him?
No. Unless, of course, we have to start within 60 days with our disciplinary inquiry. That's by the end of this month. And I don't think that will last very long. The disciplinary inquiry is just... I think he will plead guilty to all the charges. Otherwise, the other magistrates have to testify in this regard. But Mr. Hinger is the chief magistrate. He is the cluster head. He's the chief magistrate of Bloemfontein. He is the judicial head of the administrative region. He really went out of his way to have Mr. Jacobs redeployed to another station to be supervised. But the commission Commission was at the view that there should be more evidence in that regard. If you just cannot relocate the matters, if you can't transfer the matters, that's a position that the Commission has to do. And make a recommendation to the fact that the Minister has to reappoint or transfer that particular matter. But in this instance, I don't see this being a protected hearing. The Commission is either protecting Mr. Jacobs. As a matter of fact, we charge him with misconduct. We only got aware of this problem in February last year. Mm-hmm. That's when it was first reported that there is a problem. He also was he also appeared in court on the charge of drunken driving. He was acquitted on a technical point of view. And even his attorney of record, we've been informed that he even advised his client that he should go for invitation. Chairperson, it's a difficult question. We have the situation now. It has been reported. The Commission made a resolution, took a resolution that he should be suspended and be charged with misconduct. We obtained a statement from Mr. Hinka and statements from all the other magistrates, even the regional court magistrates, from attorneys, local attorneys, from clerks at the office, from the prosecutor, like Mr. Lowe said, they didn't want to make statements because fear of the firearms, which is still having possession of this, has been seized. All these firearms were seized by the police, and now we can commence with the inquiry. But by the end of next month, I think we're done with it. And then, if he wants to resign, he can resign, but we will go for removal from office. If he wants to go to no court, then it's for him to decide.
Maybe a question of before 1994, but it's also very important to assess this whole thing. In the race group, where does this person fall?
Mr. Chair, he's a white person, a white male. I might just mention that the question has been asked now, coming from the previous meeting. The question is, should these matters of this nature be dealt with as a or be viewed as a medical situation or a disciplinary matter? That was asked to us, and we said, well, we'll have to go and look at that, because I say if a person is so influenced by liquor or alcoholic, how should it be? And they want to do investigation into that, you know, that part as well. I thought I'd just mention that that's also a question that came up. We're not sure ourselves.
This person was a magistrate officially in the judicial system of government, and other conditions they should have been stipulated when he assumed office, like actuality, wearing the cap, follow the cap, and drinking matter, alcohol should have been one of the conditions, but it's not what it don't come to a part. And these are some of the things that immediately they're detected, you are charged. This matter has taken a long time. It has taken a long time. I'm not sure whether proof you have to be dealt with when you are driving, where they take blood. But I think this one depends on the witness. The people that are out to and all sorts of things. But then he was blind many times. He should have been long dismissed. I imagine it should have been wrong. No, this person was not meant by the authorities. No? We should have been dealt with by the first parliament of democratic order, or the third parliament was not now. But my thing is just to in this way powers to protect us. And while we confirm the suspension, we also must go beyond. But whoever was in the authority must also be summoned to tell the government what was happening. He must be summoned to his immediate senior. I don't know who that. So that we satisfy ourselves whether seniors are also doing their work. So that we prevent the occurrence of this. I would recommend that while we confirm whatever and while they are asked, they should also, let's also take a decision to have the senior. Somewhere, I don't know what, people to come and just tell us why this one.
And God, that's it.
He was sent to rehabilitation. When was that? Those 2 or 3 years.
Chairperson, I hear a letter from Mr. Hinkam. That's the 12th of March 2009, addressed to the Secretary of the Matters Commission, in which he just gives a little background of the situation. He says, it's with profound regret that 2 advisors have thus mentioned has a terrible problem with alcoholism, which rears his ugly head even during working hours. In the past, he has not been in denial. If he has now somersaulted, I inform any member of the Commission to pay his surprise visit to Clockwell Island to discern if Major Jacobs will not at worst be drunk or at least be strongly smelling of liquor. Then he said, no stone has been left unturned to assist him. He has been sent to rehabilitation not less than twice. That must mean he was there in 2007, if I'm not mistaken, 2008. And he said, the good results are short-lived in the first process. In the second, he defaulted. That's when he left the institution. I've personally been frequently paying surprise visits to his office with a view to monitoring. My claims can be an overwhelming testimony to this. The subtrustees, Mr. Murabi, and Judicial Quality Assurance Officer, Mr. Hati, have been entreated to do likewise. This doesn't yield positive evidence as such. Because if another state departs that you're bound to work with unrest themselves, and experience an existence of a child of working alone also has a contradictory effect to his acute problem, this also will not reach. On the contrary, he allegedly committed a criminal offense of drunken driving. Now, we can say it was on a technical basis, but we went through the record of the proceedings to a person. The witnesses of the state were really, they were poor witnesses. There was a lot of contradiction. And you cannot, on the basis of, even on an inquiry, we would not have been successful in charging him for being drunk. He says he didn't use alcohol. He was using timian prescribed by a traditional healer just before the incident. So to justify him in that regard, this is part of one of the charges. We charge him for that. We say he was drunk, and we're going to call the traditional healer if it has to be done. To justify him, we're not going to. But this is one of the charges, the misconduct charges. But Mr. Inka already did his utmost best to deal with this particular matter. You know, he's got lots of service. He's got years of service. He is a good man, apparently. But his conduct has become to such an extent an embarrassing and a negative impact on the industry that we have to relieve him from office, remove him from office, or we have to charge him with misconduct. There's no reputation. One has to ask yourself to such an extent, what must the commission do to assist a magistrate, to help him overcome his problem? But if he doesn't, if he's in denial and say, I don't have a drinking problem, then surely you must deal with him in this community. That's the view of the commission. We charge him with misconduct. We're going to sue for a removal from office. We request this committee to disagree and suspend him in the meantime, confirm the provision.
I support that we approve the suspension, one. Secondly, in our recommendation, we must say that the superiors must appear before the committee to sort out other issues, unanswered issues. That will be my proposal. We confirm the suspension. In our recommendation, we want the superiors to appear before the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. No, Chair, I second that proposal so that the superiors can come before us and so we can put questions to the superiors as well. But I would just like to say this one thing. Sometimes you can send a person to rehabilitation. The problem is might be much bigger than alcohol. And we are in use of Africa and we need to make sure that a part of children is going to suffer. As I just said, the ministry was a good man. So somewhere along the line, something went wrong. So let the officials come. He needs to be. He needs to be. And then come. And then you can see a further of the meter. I support the proposal of one of
the committee confirms the suspension. And any outstanding matters we will deal with them hereafter. Thank you very much. Honourable members, the minister requested to be here at 12, and in the meantime, we can adjourn until 12 o'clock. Correctional officers.